This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. The presidency of Donald Trump has thrown much of the nation into a sense of collective despair. Trump has attempted to steamroll over the Constitution, courted white supremacists, demonized immigrants and people of color, and rewarded religious evangelicals and corporate CEOs. But longtime consumer advocate Ralph Nader, who knows a thing or two about activism and successfully bringing about progressive change, says it's easier than we think to break through power. Mr. Nader is a multiple presidential candidate and sought-after speaker. His 1965 book, Unsafe at Any Speed, led to vast improvements in automobile safety. He helped to found dozens of advocacy organizations, including Public Citizen. And his numerous books include Unstoppable, the emerging left-right alliance to dismantle the corporate state, The 17 Solutions, Bold Ideas for Our American Future, Getting Steam to Overcome Corporatism, and even a novel called Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. He now joins me to discuss his newest book. It's called Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. Welcome to the program, Ralph Nader.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So first, let's begin with the moment that we're living in. Your book was written before Trump won the election. And it seems that there's just very, very few avenues for ending what's happening right now, short of impeachment or focusing on the Democratic Party. Do we as activists have more power than we think?
Yeah, and the avenue right now is the Congress, which is going to be up for election in 2018. And Congress has enormous power under the Constitution. It's our power that we give to them. They have been abusing it by and large, especially in recent years. They've been selling the Congress and its authority and how it taxes and how it spends to, I'll say, 1,500 major corporations who get their way with the majority of members of Congress. And that's why we have to, back home, fill those seats at the town meetings. Now, in January, people filled some of these town meetings of Republicans in California, Utah, Western New York. These Republicans are used to a lot of empty seats when they have their orchestrated town meetings. And it really shook them up. There is standing room only in some of these gatherings. And you can see them. They went back to Congress and said, people are pretty upset. And it's not just liberals. It's people. Conservatives don't want to lose their health insurance. They don't want to lose what they already have. And you've just got, several tens of thousands of people involved. I mean, that's nothing compared to the adult population of this country that can be. So pour it on. There's a recess coming up and around Memorial Day. There's a full August recess. If the members of Congress are so afraid of you, the people, showing up that they don't schedule town meetings, do what some of the people have said. We'll schedule our own town meetings at a place of local convenience, and the senators and representatives better show up. So that's the immediate response to the Trumpsters who have turned our government over to big business from Wall Street to Houston, oil and gas interests, and who are now rolling back life-saving, injury-preventing, disease-thwarting regulations that are going to kill and make sick and injure more Americans, including a lot of people who voted for Trump.
Right.
So now, we've got to use the right language here. It's not just deregulation. It's killing, injuring, and making people sicker than they would have been had these regulations been in force and had been enforced with adequate budgets.
Right, they're protections rather than, regulations. Maybe that's a word that we ought to start using to refer to regulations. In your book, Ralph, you quote Eugene Debs in the beginning, who said, "I regret that the American people can have almost anything they want under our Constitution, but they seem not to want much of anything at all." How much of a barrier to change is our own complacency?
Well, it's huge because, we really have the sovereign power. The Constitution starts with we the people, not we the Congress or we the big corporations. So we have the sovereign power. All those trillions of dollars that are being amassed by Apple and the big banks. Those originally were our dollars as consumer dollars. So we have the political and economic power, but we've had very low expectations. It's interesting how people, when they get cynical, withdraw instead of roar ahead and change the system and replace the politicians. That's sort of a cultural trait. And once you have low expectation levels, everything else follows. You don't show up to vote. You don't demand more candidates on the ballot pursuing more agendas of reform. You don't show up at town meetings or in courtrooms or on rallies and marches. So it's all in our hands, really. The top 1%, you know, in their private conversations, they fear the people arousing. They fear the rumble of the people. When Richard Nixon, you know, pretty right-wing Republican president, he kept signing one progressive bill after another, set up OSHA, EPA, Consumer Product Safety Commission. He wanted a minimum incomes plan to abolish dire poverty, which he didn't get through Congress. He wanted to give voting rights for residents of the District of Columbia. He had a better health insurance plan than Clinton did because he heard the rumble from the people and he was scared out of the 60s. So we have to, first thing is generate the rumble of the people. This is the Rumble of the People book, Sonali. This is very short, 140 pages, packed with examples proving the point that it's easier than we think to make for safer pharmaceuticals and more nutritious food and protecting people's savings. A handful of people have done a lot of this. And imagine if 20 handfuls of people, a few thousand instead of a few hundred. And the key in this book is a summons of the people to the senators and representatives. There's a summons. We the people summon you, Senator X, Senator Y, Congressperson Z, to appear at a town meeting of our making, to go over an agenda for change for the people, for once, of our design, and you better be there.
Right.
And that summons is the key that brings together left-right people who agree on a lot of issues. They don't agree on reproductive rights or maybe immigration or gun control or school prayer, but they agree on higher minimum wage, more civil liberties being undermined by the Patriot Act. They agree on criminal justice reform. They agree on cracking down on the corporate crime and abuses against consumers, workers, community, breaking up the big banks and Wall Street. They agree on changing the tax system and ending the corporate tax escapes abroad and through those huge loopholes. They agree on debloating the huge waste in Washington, the military budget, for example, the fraud of the vendors on Medicare. So there are a lot of things they agree on. And once left-right shows senators and representatives they agree, it's politically unstoppable. You get 70, 75, 80% of the population, left-right. It's politically unstoppable. And we can recover our Congress and make it our own. That's why this book, Sonali, just to finish, should be purchased as a six-pack. What do I mean? I mean, six people in a neighborhood or in a union or some group back home starting to discuss how do you take over Congress through the town meetings and then moving to higher levels of impact on those 535 people in Congress. That's all there are.
The historical perspective and context that you share in the book, I think, is crucial. And that's often what's missing, because when we look at the things that we do have today, like Social Security, like the 40-hour work week, we don't know the history of how those came about. We imagine that they were simply given to us by our lawmakers. But every step of the way in all of those instances, there was grassroots pressure, right? And often there was huge opposition from corporations, from those in power, who, you know, it seems unimaginable that they would speak out against things like, you know, regulating child labor, but they did. And that story, that how we translate grassroots pressure into laws, is often lost on us. Why? Why don't we know those stories better?
Because elementary and high school studies are full of propaganda and myths. Why would they tell these youngsters that it never took more than 1% of the people to make the changes you just pointed out, because they were supported by a majority opinion? Once you have majority opinion, it's 1% of the people or less putting in three to 500 hours a year, you know, what you what people put in for a hobby, collecting stamps, coins, etc. They can make it happen if they focus the energy on the decision makers, the state legislatures, local city council, board of education, Congress. You can't just have marches and the energy goes out into the ether. It's always got to be laser beam on who's going to make the decision, the right decision for justice for the people. And that's a lesson of American history. It's never taken more than 1%. And certainly there's 1% of the people. Every congressional district, you know, Sonali, has about 700,000 women, men, and children. Every congressional. And they have community colleges, four-year colleges. They have serious people outside of the colleges, from blue-collar to professional people. I mean, what is 1%? It's 2.5 million people. It's 225 million adults or so. And it doesn't often take even that much to get it done. We've proved it. We've seen it over the last 50 years, whenever we've overcome massive corporate power, whether to recall a car or a drug or to change the rights of whistleblowers or freedom of information or all these things, fraud on the government. We've seen it happen. Once we are organized, those corporations run for cover. And since they're very expedient and they really don't have a conscience, they're opportunistic, they adjust, just like when child labor, as you pointed out, was abolished. No more kids in dungeon factories are going to go to public schools. That was what the country demanded from the people. What happened? Well, you know, the companies hired the adults, their parents. When we said, you're not going to get away without seatbelts and airbags, well, they built it in there, made some money doing it, saved a lot of lives. So we got to have our educational system juiced up for civic skills and civic experience, starting with 10-year-old children. They have tremendous idealism, and they ask pretty tough questions of politicians. Ask Ronald Reagan.
Now, the other aspect that you discuss in your book that is so important for us to question is, well, let's call it corporate supremacy. There was a time when capitalism and corporate stranglehold on our economy was not a given. It was still questioned and debated. Today, it permeates every aspect of our life and our culture. Both parties agree that, you know, if Wall Street is doing well, that's a measure of the health of our economy rather than how the majority of us are doing well. But there are some very specific things in our sort of legal basis that give corporations so much power. Citizens United is one, which is the Supreme Court decision on campaign funding. But there's also just the basic concept of corporate personhood. Are those some very important focal points that grassroots activists can take aim at? And would overturning those aspects that give corporations so much power help undo many aspects of economic injustice?
Well, it certainly would help. I mean, you know, the Constitution doesn't mention the word corporation or company, right, or political parties. Why are they ruling us? Because they've gamed the system. They got judges in the late 19th century to declare that a railroad company was a person, although it was the scribe that did it, not the justices. A bit of a fraud on the Supreme Court with the willingness of the Supreme Court itself. But why is an artificial entity, it's not a human being, a corporation, it's created by state law and sometimes by federal law. Why have all the rights we have, plus all kinds of privileges and immunities that we human beings could never attain? Because we've allowed the legislatures to do that, because we have turned our back on our civic duties and not run for office, local, state, federal, get the vote out, and have the legislatures do what the people need, not what the corporation's greed demands. So far better, though, Sonali, in terms of reducing global corporate power, is two approaches. One is called subordination, that we do need a constitutional amendment and federal statutes that subordinate the rights of corporations, whether it's for taxation or whether for subsidies or whether for engaging in politics and elections, to that of human beings. And the second one is displacement by local economies, local businesses. That's already expanding very rapidly. You're seeing local renewable energy, local community health clinics with emphasis on prevention. Of course, you have community banks and credit unions. You have farmer to consumer markets. You have a lot of other activities at the local level that are chronicled in this magazine called Yes, Yes Magazine and other magazines. But every dollar we spent on local economies, whether they're cooperatives, small business, mutual funds, whatever, every dollar we spend takes it away from the Bank of America. It takes it away from ExxonMobil. It takes it away from Pfizer. It takes it away from Aetna Insurance Company. It takes it away from the big agribusiness companies. And we have more accountable business. They're right there. They're not in some skyscraper in Tokyo, Shanghai, New York, Chicago, London, Berlin. So it's subordination of the corporate entity to the rights and remedies of real people and displacement by expanding these community-based economies. And this book talks about all of these things, gives a lot of examples. When you pick up this book, you'll be so excited, you'll forget about any apathy, any discouragement, any despair. How's that for a boast?
The name of the book for our radio audience is Breaking Through Power. It's Easier Than We Think. And I'm speaking with Ralph Nader, its author. Let's finally talk about the media, which you also discuss in your book. And this is such an important aspect of our conversations. We have a sector of right-wing media that has done a very effective job at seemingly brainwashing sectors of our society into thinking that a billionaire is interested in helping out the little guy. But the public airwaves belong to us, and we often forget that fact. I mean, these big corporations are essentially leasing the public airwaves, but they are our airwaves. And today we have somebody at the FCC appointed by Trump, Ajit Pai, who is looking to undo net neutrality and basically do even greater giveaways to corporations. How important is it for us to focus grassroots activism on retaking our control over the media and our public airwaves in particular?
Very important. This is where you get a left-right unstoppable political movement, because that's part of the displacement theme I just discussed. We own the greatest wealth in our country. I know the 1% have a lot of money compared to the 99%. But if you look at the wealth that are owned by the people as part of what's called the commons, it towers over whatever money the oligarchy actually owns. Now, what am I talking about? The public lands, one third of America, plus offshore even more, owned by the people. The public airways, as you mentioned, owned by the people. Trillions of dollars of pension money, mutual funds, which should be controlled by the people. It's their savings, after all.
And Ralph, just to interrupt you for a second, Trump has talked about wanting to let fossil fuel companies drill on public lands. He has called it a federal land grab, which is just unbelievable. That land belongs to us.
Of course. So if we control what we already own under the law, we already own, we can turn the tide against these corporations like never before, because it's one thing to own a lot of wealth in common, all the American people. But if the timber gas companies control the public lands, the coal companies, if the broadcast industry controls the public airwaves, if all the trillions of dollars of taxpayer money that built the industries in Silicon Valley, the computer industry, the containerization industry, the biotech industry, the nanotech industry, you wouldn't even hear about most of these if it wasn't for basic research and development over 60 years by the U.S. taxpayer through the Department of Defense, NASA, the National Institutes of Health. So what are we getting for all this? We're getting ripped off. We're getting exploited. We're getting polluted. So we say to conservatives and liberals, hey, do you believe that we should control some of what we own? Darn right. Yeah, because it's a left-right. People believe that. And that's what we got to do. We're letting the national parks starve, huge deferred maintenance, while they're building more aircraft carriers at $13 billion a carrier, which we don't need, not to mention all the nuclear weapons. So it's all in our hands. 535 people in Congress, enormous power, we gave them, bring it back, make it accountable, put agenda items on the accountable power, watchdog them, takes less than 1% of the people. Civic hobby, Congress watchdog clubs in every congressional district. Nobody can stop that.
Ralph Nader, I want to thank you so much for spending this time with us. Really appreciate it. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you, audience. And let's get going. It's easier than we think. This is the book to get it going.
My guest is Ralph Nader, longtime consumer advocate, lawyer, author, multiple-time presidential candidate. We're talking about his latest book, one of many books he's written. It's called Breaking Through Power. It's easier than we think. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.